When we think about a community from the perspective of someone like me and my colleagues who work in a community organization, it's easy to think only of the problems and gaps in services that we're trying to address. These are often the topics that we focus on with this show. But with this view, it can be easy to lose sight of what a community really is. It's simply people and them sharing a certain something in common, a shared identity or viewpoint. And it's through these stories that we create and communicate our identity. And it's through our stories that we create and communicate our identity. Stories are the blood and bones of a community. Wherever there has been a group of people, there have been tales, songs, histories, and stories. So let's chat a little bit about a story about the townships from a storyteller who lives in the townships. Stick around. This is about Townshippers. So, thanks so much for being on the show, Stephen.
My pleasure.
Well, so for those of this is your second time on the show. For those of you who didn't hear our first interview, could you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing?
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here today. I took writing classes in the 1980s. I've always been interested in writing, and I always dabbled in. I've been with groups, writing groups, when I was in Montreal at the time, and then I moved to Alberta, and I was with a writing group there, and that was where I started my first novel. It was called Of Brothers and Assassins, and it was an historical fiction book based on the life and times of Kootenai Brown and Rattlesnake Jack, who were the scouts for a group called the Rocky Mountain Rangers. It was a militia that was formed in response to the Second Riel Rebellion in 1885. That book took me a long time to write, just about 10 years, but it was my first foray into it, and I had to start over several times for various technical reasons, so it took me a long time. But by the time, and I was at work during those periods of time, and so I didn't really have a lot of time to write. But when I retired and I moved to Knowlton in 2017, I had more time, and then I began dabbling again with the written word. And COVID hit at one point, and we had a practice. We had a little game within my family bubble where we got together and played Scrabble games, and when the Scrabble game was finished, we'd take a picture of it, and we'd all go home, or we'd all try and write a short story based on the words that were on the Scrabble game. And then at one point, we all shared our stories, and everybody said, "Wow, Steve's yours was good. It's 18 pages long." I said, "Yeah, I think I'm going to work on this. I'm going to develop it into a book." And so I did. And so that's where the book Brome County came from. It was really originally a collection of short stories, but then the characters from each story ended up sneaking into the other stories. And so it ended up being a novel. And so it ended where all the characters come together at the end at the Brome Fair and in a dramatic conclusion to the story. And that took me a year. I was happy with that. And so I said, I'm going to start another one. And because I'd written about Brome County, now it was time to go into Missisquoi County. And originally, Zola, the title was Missisquoi County, but I changed it to Zola. People that I knew had trouble pronouncing the word Missisquoi, and so I said, I can't have a difficult word to pronounce on the cover of the book. So I changed it to Zola, and I was happy I did, and because it captures the essence of the book, which is about this 65-year-old woman who is the chief of police in the town of Bedford. But that's where the book Zola came from. One book was Brome County, one book was in Missisquoi County.
Yeah, so Zola is the second of a series.
Yes.
From what I understand, the first story, Brome County, it jumps around a little bit. This story focuses more entirely on this one character, Zola, correct?
It does.
Yeah. Are the worlds, so this is a series, but they're not necessarily, you said that some of the characters kind of blend into each other. Is this kind of like a world of the townships, a fictional version of the townships? Is it kind of like a coherent world, but there's kind of different stories that you're playing with within this world?
It is. There's a universe within there. Mm-hmm. For example, in Brome County, there was a character called Jojo Allison. She was a young police officer. This was going back a while. She was a young police officer with the SQ in Cowansville. And in the book Zola, Zola meets with, and she knows of JoJo Allison, mm-hmm. so they meet. So there's a universe of people who, depending on the year of the action, they come in and out of the stories. Mm-hmm. But they're not, the stories are not related. They're just characters. But in Zola, it takes place only in one year. The year is 2025, mm-hmm. and it takes over the period of from spring until the end of the year, generally. So, mm-hmm. And the investigation that Zola is involved in.
And you live here in Knowlton,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
You also, like you had mentioned before, you lived in many places.
Yes.
You lived on and off in the townships
yes,
as well.
Yes, I have, yes.
Does your experience living in the townships kind of inform this world that you've created in Tales from the Townships?
It does. It does very, very much. Yeah. In the 70s, I lived in Cowansville, and I was a police officer with the SQ. That allowed me to get to know intimately Brome and Missisquoi County. And later in the 80s, I had a cottage up near Mount Echo. And now I'm back living in Knowlton, and I'm happy. And so I love the townships, all of the townships, not just Brome, Missisquoi, but all of the townships. I travel around, and I love the people from the Sherbrooke area in Lennoxville and North Hatley. It's all a great area of the province, and I love it. But my heart is right here in Brome County and Missisquoi County. And the experiences that I had and the love I have for this geographical area figures into a major part into the books. When I write the books, when I write about Brome County or Missisquoi County, I write, the geography is exact. Mm. I'm using the road names, I'm using the town names, I don't fictionalize any of that. Mm. So the structure to the stories, geographically speaking, is right there. I've heard people say, we really enjoy reading that. He went to Mansonville, then he took this road. We enjoy reading about our own county, about our own world in your books, and I'm happy to do that. I don't crave or I don't want to create a fictionalized county or town. I don't want to do that at all. Mm. I want to capture the essence. But then the stories that I build into it are all fictional.
Mm. It helps to bring the world to life if people are familiar with the place.
Exactly.
Right?
There's a connection.
Yeah.
There's a connection already between, if you go to Montreal or anywhere and you say, somebody says, well, I'm from the Eastern Townships of Quebec. And you say, well, where? And there's an automatic connection. And it's a strong connection to the people of, well, mostly I know Brome County, but it's a strong connection. And so we enjoy seeing that in the written word that we're talking about our area. And yep.
It's also rare for a smaller community to have these representations of our area, of our community, that we can see reflected back to us. You know?
Exactly.
If you're from New York, you get that all the time. You know?
Yes, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Exactly. You see Times Square, you see Columbus Circle, you see these things. And if you go and visit, you recognize them. Mm-hmm. But Glen Mountain, Knowlton, Sutton Mountain, all of these places are integral parts of our being because we live in the townships and we love it. And so when we see it depicted in the story, it makes a connection between everyone among us all, yes.
Yeah, I mean, when people say, oh, the townships are so beautiful, these are the places they're talking about.
Exactly. And tourists flock here in great numbers to visit and to see the change of colors in the autumn. And yet we live here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. Yes. Yeah.
So writing, three novels now. It's a lot of work, I imagine. I imagine it's a lot of time in front of your computer screen alone. Do you find it to be a solitary or maybe isolating activity to write novels?
It is. You have to be a bit of an introvert to be good at it, to have the patience to sit, put the seat of your pants into the seat of the chair, and to work at this hour after hour. So that part of it is a very, very solitary act. But it's not done in a vacuum, not for me at any rate. I'm fortunate that here in Knowlton, we have a writer's group. And everywhere I've written, when I was in Alberta, I was in a writer's group that worked out of the library. And the same here. We have a group called Easy Writers of Lac Brome, and we work out of the library right here in Knowlton. And we meet every Tuesday afternoon, and we're about eight of us, and we get together and we share what we're working on. We read from it, we get comments, we get critiques, and we get encouragement. And we're able to do the same for the others who present the works. Not everybody is writing fiction. Some people are. Some people write poetry. Some people write haiku. Some people are writing memoirs. And so it's a variety of writing. But still, we're all together. And this has been going on for like 4 years, I think, now. And we enjoy it very much. Hmm. And so that allows us to practice or to try things out before actually writing them down. You don't know if it's going to work. If you read it before the group and they said, we didn't understand it at all, what's happening there? Then you better go back to the drawing board and try and make it a little bit more cohesive. Mm-hmm. So in that way, writing is teamwork. Mm-hmm. And also, I have an editor, and And so there's always a team that puts together a book. The initial writing part of it, the conceiving of the ideas, that's sort of a solitary thing, but it's not all solitary. There's teamwork afterwards, yes.
So for you, writing a novel is a bit of a kind of iterative process. You bounce it off. You have a moment of solitude, and then you bounce it off your teammates. And
yes, you do bounce it off. Generally, you also have to have confidence in what you're doing, too. And most people who come to the group, they do. They know where they want to go. I know where I want to go in whatever I'm writing, and I'm going to bounce off ideas, and I'm going to get maybe criticisms or maybe congratulations on certain aspects of it. We all do that, but we're all on our own road. It's our own little trip that we're going on in that book, and we don't want to be diverted. Mm-hmm. You should write. No, nobody's going to say that. You should write about something else. No, they're going to encourage you to keep on your own road.
Mm-hmm. Do you think being part of a group motivates you?
It does. Oh, yes.
I want to get this finished so that they can read it.
Yeah. Well, what it is that we meet every Tuesday, and we read from our work every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So every Tuesday, I have to have something fresh, ready to read to the group. Hmm. So that pushes me. I don't ever want to go into the group and say, I don't have anything this week. I would not like that. There's no pressure. You don't have to. A lot of people come in and say, it was a busy week. I was on a trip. It's not a problem. Everybody's on their own little journey. Hmm. But for me, I want to have a new chapter or part of a chapter or a new sequence, a scene that's ready for this afternoon. And I do have one for this afternoon.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Did you take a little break after writing the first novel in between the two, or did you just continue through?
You continue because as you're finishing the Sting One novel, there's a lot in, like, it's called post-production. You're getting it ready to be published, and so you're not really writing at that point. So that's when your mind, your imagination, which was very active in the producing of the book, it's still active and wants to create more. And so while you're getting into the final stages of, you're starting your next project. Mm-hmm. And you do want to get into that next project while it's still fresh in your mind.
Hmm. So you push through. You mentioned that you're already on to the third one in the series, correct? Is it in the series, novel you're working on right now?
Yes, it will be.
Yeah.
Yes, it will be. Do you want to hear about that one?
I think we'll get to that in a moment. But
yes.
I want to focus a little bit more on the novel Zola. You named it Zola after the character, who's a police officer. She's in her 60s. She's 65 years old.
Yes.
And she is she's the chief of police.
Bedford.
In Bedford, yes.
Yes.
So on the one hand, she's kind of a unique character. These are not the typical police-focused characters that we read about. And I was wondering why you chose to kind of pick a little bit of an older and also a female police officer as your protagonist in this story.
Originally, years ago, I would not have thought of it. Mm-hmm. I would not have embraced the notion of trying to write from the perspective of a woman. Mm-hmm. But in Broome County, I wrote about JoJo Allison. And I thought that I did that reasonably well with respect and feeling. And so I said, I'm going to try and do it. And the reason I wanted to do it was because there's a paucity of female heroes in this world. Mm-hmm. We need more female heroes. And we need more female heroes of a certain age. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all Reacher and the Bourne Identity, and it's all men running around saving the world.
Yeah.
Well, it's not all the world. It's Missisquoi County, but she's doing it. She's not superhuman. She doesn't claim to be superhuman. She's just a very good cop dedicated to what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And she's of a certain age, and hooray for her. And there are many people. And Knowlton has an active population of retirees, let's say. You have people who are skiing, you have people who are playing tennis, pickleball, all kinds of sports, well into their 60s, 70s, even 80s, going to the gym. This happens. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to reflect. I wanted it to be real. She's not doing superhuman things, but she is getting the job done. And she's 65 years of age. Why not? We're due for this. We need this.
Oh, great. Great. And you yourself were a police officer. And I was wondering how that informed your creation of this character. I mean, she's obviously a different, very different person than you, but I was just wondering how it informed you.
Well, the experiences that I had, for example, in my early years, I worked as a patrol officer out of the Townsville Detachment, and she did too. Mm-hmm. And so, according to the Zola book, she was transferred to headquarters in Montreal on Parthenay Street, where she joined the auto theft team. That's what I did too. Mm-hmm. in my career. I was in major crimes, and I was in Montreal. And that's where I ended my career. After my career, I went on, after I retired, I went on to something else, but she didn't. She went back to her home. She is from Bedford. And so she started up her ranch at home, which she has a little ranch, and she gives riding lessons. And they offered her the position of chief of police, which she wasn't really anxious to do, but she accepted it. And she took on the role with, it's not a hard life. It's not that difficult, but it's still police work. And she took it on.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the things that I went through are reflected in there. But it's not me, and it's a totally other different character. Mm-hmm. But to a degree, it's some of my experiences.
Mm-hmm. So Zola she's a strong character. Do you think you could describe Zola in a few words?
She's very dedicated. She's very dedicated to what she does. She does not take her job lightly. She's dedicated and devoted to her constituents in Bedford and surrounding area and so on. Mm-hmm. So yes, she's a little bit quirky. I love that about her. And I would hope that people, aside from her professionalism and dedication, that they will see that she's quirky and funny and she would be an interesting person to sit down and talk to. Mm. And I think I would also say that she's brave, not stupidly brave, not brazenly brave, where she run into any situation, but she's brave for a 65-year-old woman to get into the situations that she does get into the book. Kudos to her for doing that. They're not superhuman. It's not that. It's just, no, I will not tolerate this. I will take care of business. And
from what I have not read the novel in its totality, but from what I've read of the novel, she seems like a very realistic character, not at all a cartoon kind of depiction of a hero.
No, she's not. And she's not a cartoon depiction of a hero. I find her very human. And, mm-hmm. and this is why also there's a lot of introspection. Zola does a lot of talking to herself, in other words, talking to the reader about how she feels about in a certain situation. So we get to know her. The book is told in the first person. Mm-hmm. So she's saying, that terrified me, or I enjoyed. She'll speak to the reader. Mm-hmm. And we get to know what she's feeling inside. Sometimes she's sad, sometimes she's happy. We get to know that. And so I think that's an important part. If you want to get to know a character and to love a character, interior thoughts and motivations have to speak to you. Hmm. And so that was one of the challenges of doing that. Writing from a woman's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Writing first person is very intimate.
It's intimate, yes it is, yeah. Because you can really get into the heart and soul of a person, but it's also limiting. Because everything that happens is through her eyes. Mm-hmm. There are no other eyes in the story. It's mm-hmm. only her. So that's the limitations when you're writing in the first person. But I accept those limitations so that I can get deep down into the character, find what really makes her tick and how she feels about different situations.
Mm-hmm. From her perspective, you don't get the whole context. You understand the context as the writer, correct? About the things that she doesn't see. But did you frame the story? So I know some writers sometimes frame the story, and then the characters exist in the story, and then other writers follow the perspective of the character and kind of write as they go. Do you plan everything all in advance and then write, or?
There is a plan, and the plan is to get to the end, and I know the ending. Mm-hmm. I always know the ending to where my book is going, mm-hmm. and I work towards that. It's a straight line, but there's little angles off to the left and to the right, little anecdotes, stories that will happen, and how I will get to the end can sometimes change. Mm-hmm. But I know what the ending is, and I know what the feeling will be there. I can almost write the last paragraph or the last two paragraphs. I know what the themes are going to be. In this case, I know what Zola's going to feel, because I don't know what any other characters in the book feel, mm-hmm. because it's not their book, it's Zola's book. And so I know what she's going to feel at the end. It has to be good stuff. It has to be good. And so my journey is to get to the end of the book. Mm-hmm. And how I get there sometimes may change. Well, I'll drop that or I'll add that. For example, the beginning of the book. Originally, the beginning of the book was the meeting between Zola and her soon-to-be partner in police work, Roxane Landry. That was the beginning of the book. And I found that while there was interesting conversations, there was not enough action for the beginning of a book. Mm-hmm. You want the beginning of the book to start like a movie on Netflix. Action, action, action. Then slow it down and explain who is who and what happened there. So you want to hook in the reader. You want to get them interested. And you want to promise them that there's going to be a good story and some good action in this book. Stick with me. Mm. And the reason is because of this first sequence. So In the first sequence, we have Zola explaining to the reader who she is, and within a few paragraphs, she's into the action. And that action will, I hope, will hook the reader into staying with the rest of the story, hoping there'll be more action and more activity and crimes and bad guys and so on.
So it does start with a good amount of action. It's an interesting scene. It's a technique, you're right, exactly, from Netflix shows. It's a technique they use a lot in series. I think in Breaking Bad, you ever watch that series?
Yes, of course.
It started right away in the action, and then you
go back.
You go back.
You go back, exactly. So the first sequence with the bad guy who was assaulting a woman, that was in the middle of the book. That was something that happened on the journey to the end of the book. But then I said, no, bring that to the front. So I put that right at the front. So we get people hooked in with the action. And you're exactly right. That's what they did in Breaking Bad. It was out of sequence, but it doesn't matter. It's you want to hook the person, hook the reader with some action, and they're going to say, wow, what's going on here? I want more of this.
I forgot which author that this was. I think it's a Russian author. I'm forgetting who it was exactly, but who said, take a story and cut off the beginning and just start. Because of the classic way of telling the whole backstory and stuff, it's a bit boring.
there is. You don't want to get into the weeds too much too early, and you can do that later on. And if you have some complicated things to explain, do it in bits and parts as you're going through the story. Do not. There's another famous one in writing is show, don't tell.
Yes.
Don't be telling the reader about what's happening. Show them what's happening and show them why this person is the way they are, and don't just tell.
Yeah, I think it's great advice. Great advice that any young writer should hold at heart. I think, Stephen, we're going to take a quick break here, listen to a little bit of music, and we'll be back shortly.
He's head of you. He's talking shit. He never thinks of you. So bite your lip and watch him walk off with his friends, leaving you all alone once again. Shorts, get you a tie and you a knot. Won't let you leave, put on the wall. Get you a coil and all the shorts. Get you a tie and you a knot. Won't let you leave, put on the wall. Get you a coil and all the shorts. Get you a tie and you a knot. Never let you leave.
Are you an English speaker looking for information on the services, programs, and activities available to you in Eastern Townships? Well, perhaps you want to stay up to date on the government policies and legislation that affect you, your family, and your community. Well, if so, Townshipers Association can help. You see, we've been supporting the English-speaking community since about 1979. So to learn more about the many different resources in the townships, visit our website, townshippers.org. You can find us on Facebook, and you can discover a whole lineup of videos on our YouTube channel. And of course, you can tune into our weekly episode of About Townshippers on CIDI 99.1 FM on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and Thursdays at 1 p.m. And if you're in the CGMQ 88.9 FM broadcasting area, well, you can listen on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. or on Thursdays at 4 p.m. And if there's an organization, a service, or a program you'd like us to talk about on the show, well, just send us an email, ta@townshippers.org. Whether you're a townshipper for life or a townshipper for a day, we're happy you're there, and thanks for listening.
What a beautiful song. That was Blue Ridge Mountains by Fleet Foxes, and before that was Early to the Party by Andy Schaaf. We're here on CIDI 99.1 FM and CJMQ 88.9 FM, and you're listening to About Townshippers. Today we're speaking with Stephen Gobi about his new novel called Zola. Welcome back, Stephen.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Zola as a novel, Zola as a character, and I was wondering, did she change this character Zola, who's a police officer? She's experienced. She's 65 years old when the story starts. Does she change much throughout the course of the book, or is it more the world that is changing around her?
It's a good question. It's a good question because in fiction, whether it's movies or plays or a novel, you want the character to have an arc. Mm. You want the character to change by the end of the story. But she's a 65-year-old woman who knows who she is and knows what she does. And so I couldn't envision too much change in her. And so she's already a fully formed character when we start. However, there was room for some realization, some self-realization. And so by the end of the story, it becomes clear, reading in the final chapters, that she's coming to realize the importance of certain things in her life, and which maybe she didn't think about too much before. Loyalty, friendships, and in one portion she says, in one place she says, sometimes hope is all there is to hope for. And so, because she sees some bad stuff in the telling of this story, she does see some hard things, and she sees people going bad, but she hopes for redemption in certain of the people. And so hope is a big one too. Hopes and friendships. So she doesn't change, but she realizes what is very important.
Yeah, so she doesn't change the character as much as she learns something new.
Yeah, she comes to realize that these things are important. It's less of a change, but we can't have a huge change to a person who's 65 years of age. They're usually the way they are at that point.
Yeah, that's realistic. I mean, from what I've read so far, I found it very familiar, very realistic. I mean, the setting, of course, is very familiar. I live here in the townships as well, and I come to Brome, Missisquoi all the time. I'm Missisquoi County. I found that, I want to come bring back, I know we were talking about the beginning of the novel, I want to kind of go back to that. The character that you open up with, who is, you know, far from being a bit of a villain, the man who's kind of accosting a woman when Zola arrives, Zola intervenes and acts decisively. This character, he's far from being the cartoon villain, he's actually kind of uncomfortably familiar to me. You know, he's the kind of guy that we've all met. You know,
he's toxic masculinity, just about, isn't he? Right.
Yeah.
He is. His name is Adam, and he comes upon the scene. He's a young man, and he has some weird notions of, I imagine, what a dating situation is. And so Zola does arrest him and comes to the rescue of the woman who was involved. It all happens in her little town. But even in the end, she will say, he's young, he can still change. She has hope for him to change. She goes back to him at the end of the book and says, we hope that this guy will change. She has hope for change. Some people who are on in years and they're bad, there's no hope for them. But a young person can change, and there is a person in the story, a person by the name of Glenn, who comes into the story towards the end in the third part of the book, which is called Eccles Hill. That person had a hard start when he was young. He was arrested by police. He got into trouble. He had a bad start in life, but then he got his act together and turned his life around, and now was a viable and a productive person. Many years later, this like 50 years later, in running of a business in Frielsesburg, and at one point he did the right thing by calling Zola to report something. So she said, he changed. There's hope. When they're young, we have hope. So try and do something good with them when they're young. At 60, it's hard to change a criminal into something good. Maybe you can, but when they're young, we have to try. And not that we tolerate their nonsense, but she had hope for Glenn, and she had hope for Adam that he will not turn into a... And the character, the woman character in that sequence, she says, no, not all people are all bad. Some are only half bad. and they'll get it out of their system, and then they'll turn into a productive person of society. And so it's a different way to look at that. But it should never be black and white. It's all shades of gray. Even when you're looking at bad people, there should be shades of gray. Some are extreme, and there's no gray. It's all dark evil.
Of course, right?
She has hope. She's not jaded in her opinion or her vision of life and of bad guys. She's not jaded. There's nothing good. No, she's not. She's thoughtful. She's considerate and has hope for people to change their ways.
So she, as a police officer, is she a little bit more focused on wanting to reform people than being a kind of punitive force?
I don't think she's so much into reforming them. She, with that Adam fellow at the beginning of the story, she dealt with him. She dealt with him how she dealt. And she didn't say to him, she did, as a matter of fact, say something to him, what happens from here is under your control. Mm-hmm. Are you going to make this into a teaching, a learning moment? Mm-hmm. You learn something from this? Or are you going to keep on doing bad things? It's up to you. But try not to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a pep talk, but she will not give in to these evil people, and she hopes that they will somehow reform themselves, but she's not the reformer. She's just a witness to what's happening, and she's not going to try and reform them. That's not her job.
Mm-hmm. But she clearly, you're describing her as having empathy for these characters.
Huge amount of empathy. Yes. If a police officer can slap the cuffs on somebody, throw them into the back of the car, take them to the station, charge them with assault, and say, try to be good, son. Don't go this path. Because she realizes that when they're young, and in their teens and in their 20s, there's still hope for them.
Mm-hmm.
There may not be hope later on, but there's still hope for them. And she tries to do that. But she has a great amount of empathy, for sure. Yes.
Without spoilers, how do you hope people feel, like the readers will feel by the end of Zola?
I'm fortunate that I had several people contact me, and they said, I was sad to see the story come to an end. I'm looking at the pages, they're getting thinner, they're less pages, and we'd want it to come to an end. But it does come to an end, and it comes to a good end, I think. I think it comes to a good end. I think it's a heartwarming end of the story with positive lights all over it. And so I hope that they enjoyed the ride. That's what I want the reader, that I enjoyed the ride. And please don't let Zola off the hook. Bring her back. I hope they say that, because that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. We want Zola to come back. And I wouldn't mind also that a bunch of people start picketing in front of CBC. Make this into a movie. Make this into a series. Yeah. This is a Canadian story right here. But that's just my literary mind going into overdrive.
Yeah.
But getting positive feedback from the people that... and people do say they enjoyed the ride. It was a glorious ride along. We learned a lot about different things. We learned about vehicle crime. We learned about the transportation of international trafficking of women. We learned a lot. But at the end, we learned about Zola and how she cared about everyone around her and tried to do a good job, and how the story ends in a... I do a sort of a long wrap-up of what happened to everybody that was involved. And so it's I think it's a good story, and it's a heartwarming story. It doesn't end sad. It's sad because the story of Zola is over, right?
Yeah.
But maybe it's not. We never know.
Those are the best
I think
books.
So.
Yeah.
You want to say, this was a nice... I don't know how it's going to end. How is it going to end? She looks like it's in trouble. Where is it going to go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the end. It's a positive feeling. Zola wins. She wins, of course. Other people don't win. The bad people don't win. And she discovers old relationships, old friends that come back into play. And I think it's heartwarming. It's a good feeling to it. It's a good feeling to it.
Okay, a good feel good ending. You're hoping people feel good.
Yeah.
Have you received good feedback from the community?
I have. When I was writing it, naturally, all the people in my writers group knew the book. They knew the story, what was going to happen. So they knew all of that. And so they were very supportive and complimentary. But then I got some emails, and other people I met, they said, hey, that was excellent. I love that one. And that's always a thrill. You can't get enough of that, to tell you the truth. Because as you said, it's a solitary act. We sit there at a computer and you write for a year or 2 years. You're writing the story. You're investing into the creation of a universe of people and how they are connected and how they react to each other. You're creating this whole thing. And then at one point you said, okay, it's done. you put it to the side, it gets published, but that those people are still roaming around in your head. Mm. They're still alive in you because you know them so intimately. But so if somebody says, I love this part, I love this part, I said, yeah, tell me more what you loved about it. Yes, yeah. Good feedback. We all want good feedback, don't we?
Yeah. 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 Do you use the feedback to inform your future writing as well, or?
I will. If nobody liked Zola, I won't do Zola again, or I won't, you know, but it will. It will affect your writing for sure. And there were some good reviews too that that came in. So it will, but it really shouldn't. You're on your own path as a writer. Yeah. You're alone with your computer. You're on your own path. You got to figure it all out for yourself. If everybody, if all 100% feedback is negative, you might want to. But how? You've gone through too many steps before that. It can't be too. It can't be that. It can't be bad because you've gone through all the steps of the writing group and your editor, and so you couldn't. You're hoping that it's well received and people enjoy it, and it's a heartwarming story that moved them. That's all you wanted. It moved me. Writing a story with a lot of emotions in it affects the writer. Mm-hmm. You want that to affect the reader. You don't want the reader to say, "Ah, that was all right." No, I want more than that. I want you to be affected by it.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you, before finishing the book, at some point, you have a good idea of what the ending is going to be, and you have a good idea of the feeling, what you're going to feel at the end, or what the character, what Zola is going to feel at the end. Do you have any process for kind of envisioning, or how does your creative process work for this?
It comes to you. It comes to you. You might start with a character saying, "I love this character Zola," but that didn't happen to me. At first, it was the story. I think I want to do something about Missisquoi County first of all. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring in auto theft because I know that business, and I'm going to bring in a retired person. I said, why not a woman? I did Allison, Jojo Allison in the other book. I think I can handle a female character of a certain age. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. And so you get, and also I have to say this, when you're driving the roads of Bromar, Missisquoi County, you become inspired by what you see, mm-hmm. and kind of conversations come to your mind. Mm-hmm. You just, I got to use that. Well, traveling through from Frilesbrück to Saint-Armand, there's a place called Eccles Hill. Mm-hmm. It's a historical place. It was the scene of a Fenian raid in 1870. There's a marker there, mm-hmm. and you can drive there. It's not easy to get to. It's remote. But when you get there, you're a stone's throw away from the United States, and this is where the final dramatic conclusion of Zola takes place, right there at this remote place. Hmm. And anybody can drive down there. I've been there. I've been there with my daughter. I've taken friends to look at this. This is interesting. It's a piece of history that from so far in the back, and it's beautiful out here. Mm-hmm. And so then I said, that's where my whole story is going to end, right there.
Hmm. Would you say that your best ideas come to you while you're driving? Or
To a great extent. Even bicycling this last summer. This summer I was bicycling, and things... You have to be in a certain state of mind. I don't have too much worry. There's nothing taxing too much of happening to you right now. And ideas will just come to you. They just come to you. A conversation. Oh, no, that's dumb. But this, maybe this. Yeah. And then you go home and you try it. Mm. And
be sure to write it down right away? Or
I don't have to write it down right away because the ideas that I get are of a large nature. Mm-hmm. They're never little specific details.
Yeah.
It's always of a large nature that this guy and this guy should be talking. They should have this conversation. They should meet at a certain place. Mm-hmm. Then I just remember that and I'll go down and write that.
Yeah.
So I do get inspired in different places. Sometimes when you're writing, you get inspired. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you're off doing something else too.
You mentioned also that you, for the first novel, for Brome County, you got inspired partly by a photo of the different words in Scrabble, a bit of a random writing exercise.
Yes,
do you still practice these kind of creative writing exercises?
No. That we did that because of COVID.
It was something
to bring the family together, and then we would get back together and read our stories. And everybody else would, they're not writers, they would bring a paragraph or a page. Mm-hmm. And I brought 18 pages.
Yeah.
and so once I get going, it's hard to stop sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I don't do that. For me, the creative juices start when you start writing, and they open up and they continue while you're writing. And then when you stop writing and you're driving to go somewhere else, they'll continue because you're living in a universe that you created. At the beginning, it's initial. It's not that big. As you get more into the book, you know all your characters and you know how they interact together. It's a universe. Mm-hmm. And so it stays with you all the time. Hmm.
So the first book was Brome County, set in Brome County. This one was set in Missisquoi County. What's next for Tales from the Townships?
I think we're going to go back to Brome County. Okay. And we're going to go back to Zola. Mm-hmm. We're going to go do a prequel, and this is what I'm writing right now. Zola is 25 years of age. Her first detachment is Cowansville SQ. She was a patrol officer there, and she's going to learn the business of patrol of police work from there. So she may have a bigger arc than she did as an older woman at 65. At 25, she's not the same person, but you can see the person she's going to become eventually through the work that she does. So she's younger, a little bit naive, still has some of the guts that the 65-year-old will have, but she does not have the know-how. And so that's what I'm working on now.
So it'll be set in the 80s, am I?
No, it'll be set in 1985.
Yeah.
85 to 89.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Were you a police officer at that time?
I was. I started in 71.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So I was in Cownsville in the 70s. Hmm. But yes.
So you're drawing a little bit on your experience as a young police officer?
Yeah, yes. Some of them, not a lot, nothing that's identifiable.
Yeah.
It's more that when you're a young police officer, you're coming upon accidents, you're giving tickets out. That's always an experience for the person who's getting the ticket, and also for the cop, because it can go bad.
Yeah.
You know, it can turn into a miserable experience. But it's also breaking and entries. Brome County is famous for their breaking and enterings, and that you have to deal with, and accidents. And so there's all this stuff. I bring in stuff that are totally fictitious, but that's part of the job. You have to do that. But it's definitely police work. It's definitely police work.
Yeah. Zola's based now in 2025, right?
Yes, it's based in 2025.
2025, so a year ago. But is it different writing a book about the past? You've written, your first novel was written was a historical novel. This is going back to the 80s. Is it different for you?
Not really. Not really. The stories, the telling, the language is more or less all the same. There are certain things you can't, there are no cell phones. That doesn't exist. Computers don't exist in 1985.
Yeah.
So you can say, call me, I'll call you when I get home. Yeah, because there are no cell phones and there's no computers. So the world is less technological. You have to rely on police radio in the car. You have to be careful of what you use. The technology is different, but those are small details that you just have to be careful of. But otherwise, it's still, there are certain historical things. In 1985, she has a conversation with an American, and they're still talking about the Vietnam War. It was just over in 1975, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still close to their minds, and so the world is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I Google often what happened here, what happened here, when here, to know, to get a feeling, even though I was there, but you don't remember everything with the encyclopedic quality. You know?
Yeah. the order of things shifts around.
What were the cars? What cars were we driving, right?
Yeah.
And that type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so easy nowadays. You don't have to go to a library to research. You Google anything, you're going to get your answer. What was the, today we have the SAAQ, to where you get your driver's license. Mm. What was it called way back then? Was it called the SAAQ? I don't think so. Was it called the RAAQ? I think so. But I'm not sure what year it changed from Bureau de Licence. So all of this stuff you have to check. What laws were in effect? When did the seat belt laws come into effect?
Mm-hmm.
What were the fines for speeding at the time? Mm-hmm. So some of these things you have to verify. But it's easy. You don't have to go far.
Peter. Was it Brome or was it Brome, Missisquoi?
it was Brome County and Missisquoi County.
Yeah.
Okay. That changed. I got into that in the book Brome County when they amalgamated the two counties together to make Brome, Missisquoi into an MRC.
Yeah.
So at the time it was two different counties totally.
Hmm. So you have to keep all these little details in.
You have to check them, then you write them down. You put them in the story, and then it's done. So yeah.
Oh, perfect. So you're what stage are you at in the writing process for this third book?
I'm close to half done. Now, half done for a first draft, that doesn't mean it's close to, it's finished. But the storyline has gone. I'm at the end of the first part one, and I'm going to go into the second part after a big sequence at the end of part one, and it's going to go in, and she's still in the learning mode. She's learning the business. She's learning how to be a good cop. She has a good teacher in particular, and she's always with him, and so the story will continue until, and there's going to be several, there are several big investigations going on, and they're going to start in the in part two of the book and go until the end. So it's on its way. It's on its way. But I told myself, take 2 years for this one. Don't do it in a year. Take time so that you can polish it. Go back and fix. Go back and polish. If you're too much of a hurry sometimes, you say, well, I should have done that. I regretted not doing that. But it's sometimes you have to take a breather, leave it alone for a while, and then go back to it. So I'm going to take 2 years for this one.
Oh, great. So people can find your books in Lac Brome Books?
Yes, yeah. right here. There's
Brome Lake Books, I should
Brome say. Lake Books, yes. Yeah. And they have, and again, kudos and big thanks to Brome Lake Books for having a local author section where people can look, and it's not hidden among all the other books in the store, among the famous authors. These are local authors, and there's many books. They run out of space sometimes. Yeah. So we love them for that we write a book and we can put it in there. They invite us to do a book launch at the Brome Lake Books.
Wonderful.
I mean, it is. They're truly supportive. And I know that also that Louise Penny is very supportive of the local authors too. We know that. And so she's a kind of a force behind the whole community, and especially the literary community. Although we don't have much to do with her except when we see her at the coffee shop, but she's a hidden force behind everything that's going on, I believe. Yeah.
Well, that's a perfect kind of community to live as a writer, and I'd like to thank you so much, Stephen, for being on the show here, taking your time to discuss Zola. So thanks so much. I'm speaking here with Stephen Gobi, who is the author of a novel called Zola, second novel in a series. The series is called... series is called Tales from the Townships, and I just want to thank you so much for being on the show.
I appreciate it, and thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
You've been listening to About Townshippers. Episodes are broadcast on CIDI 99.1 FM on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and again on Thursdays at 1 p.m. Episodes are also broadcast on CJMQ 88.9 FM Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and Thursdays at 4 p.m. Find us in the podcast and program section of CIDI 99.1 FM's website. A shout out to Yvon Grandin, our show's technician and editor. We're so lucky to have him. In fact, if you like classic rock, check out his show, The Ivan Hour, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 p.m. on CIDI 99.1 FM. My name's Nathaniel Lamont, and this has been About Townshippers. Take care.
Just rising, I don't wanna feel I'm in the wrong place to be real. Oh, and I'm longing to love you just for a night, kissing and hugging and holding you tight. Please let me love you with all. The reasons that we're here, the reasons.
reasons. Hey.